All right. Morning, everybody. Thanks for coming out to this session. I'm just going to let the people that are sitting in the second half of the auditorium know that it might be a little difficult for you to see later on when Dharmendra's doing some of the demos, because we're going to be looking at some log files and there'll be some text. So when we did some checks last night, some of the text is hard to see the further back you are. So there's a lot of seats up front. So if you're interested, please come on down. I don't bite, he might, but there's lots of room. So we're glad you came out today. We want to talk about how Microsoft IT is managing the application lifecycle with zero touch. My name is Mark Hurley. I currently am the IT service operations lead, looking after application management, systems management, and the UDM, all the mobile devices for Microsoft. And I'm here today with Dharmendra.
Hello, everybody. My name is Dharmendra, and I work as senior service engineer in the client management team at Microsoft Redmond.
So Dharmendra mentioned to me this morning, he said, I need to get you guys to a heart rate of somewhere up about here while I'm talking at the beginning of the slides, because his demos are probably going to bring you somewhere slowly down around here. And we want to make sure you guys can walk out of here and go get lunch. So our session objectives today is we really want to provide you a framework for you to quickly onboard modern applications. So at Microsoft, obviously, when Windows 8 came out, there was a huge shift in the way that our developers were developing apps, and we needed to come up with a new strategy for how we were going to publish these modern applications quickly. And so we had to change our strategy, and we want to make sure that you guys kind of understand maybe this method will help you ramp up if your company is looking to do something similar. We want to talk about automation and why it will be a business benefit to you, how it's going to help you improve the service that you may already offer, and of course demonstrate Orchestrator, the runbooks that we have, and how that's used to integrate in the overall solution for our automation process. So how many people out there currently know about System Center Orchestrator or have used it before? Okay, that's a good number, because this session isn't really going to be talking about how to build a runbook or how that works. We're going to be more deep dive talking about the runbook that we specifically built. What about people who are familiar with Application Model and Configuration Manager? A little less. Okay, it's an app, so it's something fairly easy to pick up, and with modern app publishing, it's pretty easy to do. So the key takeaways for you guys today that we want to make sure that you leave with is how this automation solution that we develop, not necessarily something that you're going to take back and implement exactly as is in your company, but how it helped us save time and money, and who here has unlimited budget for IT department. We don't, so we're always looking at a way to cut costs and be able to reallocate our resources to work on other projects internally. We want to show you how we're using System Center Orchestrator for our application lifecycle, and believe it or not, we are going to give away the complete Orchestrator runbook and all of the custom code that we've produced, so you can take this back at the end of the session to your lab and try it out. So I hope you guys are interested in taking it back. So the session's designed really for people who are familiar with Orchestrator. We saw there's a fair amount in here. Somebody who understands application model. We're going to talk about ticketing request system. In our environment, that's TFS from Visual Studio. You guys may be using Service Manager or Action Request Remedy. If you're familiar with taking tickets into a queue to do work, that's basically what that format is. And then we want people here that love automation, I mean, because that's what we're really talking about, is how to do automation. So let's talk a bit by why we decided to do this project. Last year, we had a session where we were talking about a code name Cuttlefish that we called it, and it was basically our automation process for System Center Orchestrator to build out the entire configuration manager environment in Microsoft. So we do rapid releases of new builds of Config Manager, and we release this to the whole rebuild in basically 24 hours now. If you're interested in that session, I think it's available on Channel 9 from last year's Tech Ed edition. But to talk about why we wanted to automate, let's first take a look at what we used to do manually for our packaging and provisioning process. A lot of customers, when we talk to them, always want to know, what does Microsoft do? What's your packaging team look like? What effort do you put in? So this is prior to Windows 8. Everything MSI or custom script wrapper-based deployments, we would usually really only do about 4 to 6 applications a month for Microsoft IT. So it wasn't a huge load. However, we also had another set of external customers, the Microsoft retail store being one of them, and a couple of other external customers that we actually ran their configuration manager hierarchies for, and we needed to provide packaging for them. So even though the team is all at Redmond, those resources were spread across multiple customers. So 4 to 6 packages a month for MSIT. Our SLA basically allowed us to say, you guys can submit a single Pry 1. And if you see the chart, Pry 1 basically meant we had 3 business days to get a package created and sent to you at. It didn't really take us 3 full days to do that work, but that's the timelines that we had. And you can see with Pry 2 and Pry 3, they were extended out. These priority levels basically are what we defined as functional for us offering the service, the demand that wrapping an MSI or customizing some scripts would take for us to be successful. That process was not going to work when we moved to the modern app. And when you look at it, the reason is Windows 8 modern apps, they have a much different development life cycle than, say, your custom standard old MSI. The dev teams within internal at Microsoft building these line of business apps, they rev these things repeatedly throughout the month to get new releases, new features, fix bugs, that kind of thing. So for our automation design, we had to look at the big picture. It wasn't just going to be our team that was involved. There were going to be other teams internally. And one of them, the IT Dev Center, which I'll talk about in a couple slides, these guys basically are the governance model for how modern apps were going to be published and delivered to our internal users. And they wanted to make sure that we were providing the same kind of functionality that the developers already were used to for publishing modern apps into the Windows Store. So we wanted that same self-service kind of model where the developers, when they develop their apps, go ahead, put them into the system, the publishing will all happen on the back end, and their app will get released to the users that they want to see it. If you look previously, when I talked about, we maybe did about 6 packages in a month for Microsoft IT. We were expecting that maybe we would get 10 to 30 modern apps, and even though those are faster to build out, still requires somebody to manually create those objects in Config Manager and make sure they're targeted correctly. We ended up finding out we're averaging about 40 to 70 of those a month. And when you extrapolate that out, we're taking an 11-time increase in the load that our team had for these packaging requests. And at the same time, the IT Dev Center group, they didn't want to follow the old SLA we had where, oh, you can only submit one Pry 1 and it's going to take 3 days. Those guys have basically a 10-day window from the time the application is submitted to them to actually go through their entire process, and we're only one piece of that, the publishing piece. And they really said, hey, we can give you guys 24 hours to get this thing out once we submit it, and we may submit 10, 15 in a day. So we really had to change our model. At the same time, the packaging team that I did have, it needed to shrink, because we're a very dynamic group internally. We're always dogfooding new pieces of the product. We manage both Config Manager and the hybrid connection to Intune. So we need to be able to move our resources around where they're needed, depending on what projects we're working on. So my packaging team didn't stay as large as it was, and it's shrinking over time. And so automation really is going to solve that problem for us to be able to handle this extra load. On top of that, with the extra load, if a human being is actually creating these objects, I don't know how many of you are configuration manager admins, but most of us are human, and we do make mistakes. And a mistake, especially when you're deploying an app to thousands and thousands of users, is not a good experience and not something our team wants to promote. So anything automated means that we really can control the release and make sure that it's right the first time when it goes out. This slide's really kind of a quick show, just in case people were interested. This is really what our current deployment environment looks like. You can see we're really heavy. 72% of almost all the applications that we've got deployed right now or offered to users are really based Windows 8 modern apps. You can see scripting is still a very, very large amount, and that really is based on more of the old style MSI, where we've put a wrapper around it to do a few custom actions. In the next 6 months, though, the IT Dev Center group thinks we'll probably be pushing around 1,000 apps in the environment. So you can see this, the maintenance of this and the rev cycle is really going to increase our load. So let's talk about the automation solution. Here's some requirements that we've got. Basically, we wanted to have this self-service portal for the devs, as I was saying, kind of a one-stop shop, very similar to the Windows Marketplace, but it's all for our internal apps. And a rapid turnaround time, meaning that, you know, we don't have time to follow our old process. We need to get these tickets in and get them published and have them sent back to the devs so that they know their app's released. We needed to reduce the configuration manager overhead, basically. Our processes were designed very much so that there were multiple people involved to make sure that when we do QC, the stuff that we release is correct. And that is time intensive because people are working on multiple things. They're not just focused on packaging and deployment. And the key was just remove that entire manual provisioning process altogether. Get rid of any errors that we would create as human beings. So the technology solutions we are using, which we'll talk about today, Dharmendra will show you a lot of this in the demo, IT Dev Center, that piece is created by another internal group. That's their product. We'll show you what it looks like. It's not part of the code that we're giving you today. We're giving you the piece that starts at the Visual Studio Team Foundation server, and that's our input request. So the same process that we use to do things manually, it's the same process we use for automation, and I'm going to show you guys a little more detail on that. Of course, Orchestrator, that's the workflow system. That's where the runbook is built with all our custom code to make all of the magic happen in the background. We take advantage of the Configuration Manager out-of-box SDK, so there's like 400-plus commandlets that help you, you know, create objects and do all of the deployment in the environment. But we did find that we had to create some custom PowerShell modules so that we could do some things such as like icon import, stuff like that. All those modules were given to you, so it's not like you're going to have to go and dev them yourself. And then Active Directory commandlets, we're using that for our targeting purposes. So we use a lot of Active Directory-based security groups to decide who's going to be targeted with content. So Dharmendra will show you and talk about that. So what are the benefits? Publishing process mimics the Windows Store for the dev guys, and that's a key. They don't have to learn a lot of new process on their end. It's something they're already familiar with. We've got scripts and templates that really control the input to our system, which then on the back end controls the output to the end users, meaning the applications they see, regardless of the dev team that's dev them or who submitted the request, they're going to have the same nice user experience, just like you have when you go to the Windows Store. Our company portal is going to offer that same kind of thing. Apps are going to have a common kind of naming structure. They're going to have icon. There'll be keywords for searching stuff. So we control all that by the template, meaning if they try and put something in that we don't want, it gets rejected, and they have to fix it before it goes out. So that's something good. The publishing time, key, we cut this thing down from a 3-day turnaround for a single app to 6 hours. Technically, the app publishes a lot faster, and Dharmendra will show you that, but we tell them 6 hours. That gives time for the content to replicate to all our DPs in the environment. This way, our admins can focus on more important things, such as troubleshooting the application deployment errors or working on other projects, as I was saying, instead of spending a lot of time doing manual, repetitive work. Publishing a modern app is not difficult in itself, so it just really seemed more of a time waster for our team to just be doing these things manually. And that number is no lie. 95% of every app that we publish is completely automated, zero touch. And zero touch means we literally do not touch it from the time it's submitted to the time it goes out. There's no human being that's interfacing to get that thing published in Config Manager at all. So let's talk about the end-to-end workflow. This is going to be your 30,000 level stuff. Hopefully your heart rates are still good. Dharmendra will take you much deeper down. Let him know if something's going on and you need him to jump around or get you excited. As I was mentioning, basically the app owner submits their application into the Dev Center front end that we'll show you. DevCenter then goes through all of their process. There's a lot of app certification, certificate signing of the app and stuff. And then they submit that to our system. Our orchestrator runbook is sitting on basically a timer, and it's checking constantly to see if there's new requests put in. It's really looking at TFS. And I'll show you TFS, how we've got this structured so that orchestrator knows that something's waiting for it. It basically picks up that task and converts it and says it's in process. And this is used both for our team to know what's going on, as well as this is something that gets reported back in DevCenter. The next piece is we start doing the actual meat of actually getting this application built in the environment and sent out. We take everything out of TFS and stick it into an XML file. That may we can read once, put everything into the variables in an XML file, and that way Orchestrator can consume those directly. We use that XML to identify the activity type, and I'll explain what those are. Stuff like create, deploy, pause, supersede, that kind of thing. We call those PowerShell modules, update the task status in the ticket to say that everything's being completed, and we send it back to IT DevCenter. And that way, their portal actually tells the user that, hey, your app's published and ready to go. Go ahead and start watching for your metrics. So if we look at the application submission process, the DevCenter portal is this one-stop shop. These guys offer everything focused on the dev group. So this is dev-specific, meaning they're going to give them instructions on how to make sure that when they submit their app, it's going to be successfully accepted. It's going to make it through the Windows 8 Modern App certification process. It'll get signed. Everything that they need to do. It gives them training sessions, gives them all the details, and it really forces them into that template model that we need in order for our process to work. It increases the publishing time. So instead of the devs actually having to go and work with humans and submit tickets and wait for that stuff to process, once they submit that thing, even if it's at like 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, the process starts for them. So that's a real benefit. And it becomes their one-stop shop for their analytics of their app. So similar to the Windows Store, they really can look at how many users have installed this app. Are there any kind of issues that they need to address? You know, there may be some bug in their app that is causing a lot of errors. It'll give them that dashboard view in order to know what's going on with their app lifecycle in the environment. So we'll talk about the request management system, and then I'll quickly show you. Basically, the TFS is our ticketing system. We use that for our existing request management, and it's more for just automation. We use it for anything that our team does, whether that's patch management requests, any kind of troubleshooting activities, project work that we do. We use the Scrum-based model. I don't know how many devs there are in here, but Scrum is what's used for most of the teams in Microsoft, and that tool is basically formatted around that design. There's custom fields for automation, but there's also shared fields that are used for many activities that we do, and the application management tab is the key. So let me go into the system here, and let's take a look at what this looks like. So this is the TFS web portal. This is the front end that it would look like for our team when we get a ticket submitted. There's three key fields that we want to take advantage of, and I don't know if this laser point, no, doesn't work. Okay, so the three key things are, you can see the, let's scroll this down. There's the substate. I'm not seeing the assigned to field in here. All right. Hold on. We're getting a bad view of this ticket. Okay, let's move on. I've got a slide that I can show you after. So there's three fields. There's an assigned to field, and that's how we know this ticket is waiting for us to do something with it. There we go, under status, assigned to, SD triage. The customer, Microsoft IT, because we have multiple customers, as I was mentioning, it needs to be set to Microsoft IT to know this is something that we should be looking for automation. And then a substate waiting for automation. If I click on substate, and hopefully this works nicely, you can see we have multiple fields in here for substate. And these are the states that the process moves through, and this ticket changes, and that's part of the way we can monitor what's going on. In the same respect, this is the same thing that we use for any of our manual packaging requests or deployment requests. So we're using the same format manual as we did automated. We just took the process that we were doing manual and converted it into an automated process. But for manual packages that we still need to accomplish, The team still uses those same formats, and we use this for reporting and tracking what state current things are in. We're going to go and scroll down here and take a look at the Application Management tab. This is the details that the requester submits into the DevCenter portal. This is the information that makes sure that when the app gets published by our system, everything has the same kind of user experience. So you've got, you know, the name, the version of the app, any keywords, a description. We've got categories. So if people familiar with Config Manager and how you can put applications in categories to make it easier for the users to find apps that are specific to their work environment. Keywords, the UNC paths, if you want to put information for help files, who to contact if there's something wrong with the app, that information gets published. Of course, the icon. And one of the things I want to call out is the activity request. Once all of this information is thrown into XML, that's a key field for us to understand. What exactly are we supposed to be doing with this request? Let's slide over here. And you can see in the dropdown, these are the different activities that we actually can automate right now in the environment. There's a few key ones that we're going to show you today, Darmender is going to show you, but these are ones that basically this system is automated to do right now. So when you take this back to your lab, you actually can play around with any of those functions. One last thing I want to call out is you may notice there's a bunch of different content location fields. They're very specific to each application type. That's something we're going to talk about and learn lessons at the end of this session. This may not be the best design long term, but right now this helps us identify what kind of requirements that we need to do in the environment. So you can see there's quite a few different content location. Let's fire back to the PowerPoint. Okay, these are slides. If you take the deck, it basically gave you a look of what we're doing. So how do we read to and write in TFS? We're really, basically, TFS is acting as kind of the center spot between IT DevCenter and our group. So DevCenter basically uses TFS API calls to put input into the system. Orchestrator sits and pulls and checks to see if a ticket is sitting waiting for automation. It'll then grab that data out of TFS. It'll shoot it back into output XML. Darmender will show you what that kind of looks like. And then IT DevCenter at the back end is checking the same TFS work item, polling to see when we've returned it as automation complete. And inside the TFS work item, there's a lot of data that we write back in there, some results set, such as a link in the company portal that the developer can take, put into an email, send a mass email out to the users that they want to try the app out. This allows the user to just click on the link and it'll open up the application directly in the company portal, whether it's on a phone or on their PC, RT device, iOS, that kind of thing. To create objects in Config Manager, really the input XML is where everything goes. As I was mentioning, TFS holds all the metadata, but we just suck that out, stick that into an XML file, and that's what Orchestrator really is reading and then writing back to for the entire process. And you can see that we've got the native Config Manager commandlets to basically create and deploy applications, but you'll see delete, we had to create some custom modules for delete, and delete has a full chain effect that Darmender may mention. Hopefully we'll get through the demonstration. But in the end, all of those things file into output XML, and we have really good logging information that also is attached to the work item, meaning if something went south after it's been released and we need to figure out what actually went on in the back end, you have a log file that you can just open in the ticket instead of trying to figure out and track it down where it is, and helps you understand the exact flow that went on within our automation system to find out if there was any kind of processing problem. So these are the deployment options that I mentioned. And now we're going to get to the exciting point, and I hope you guys are still awake. This is where the demo session comes in. Darmender's got a lot of them. If you're falling asleep, put up your hand, and we'll start yelling or something. And again, everybody in the back, if you're interested, you may want to move closer depending on your eyesight. I know I was sitting at the back to see. My eyes are fairly good, I would say, but sometimes it's a little blurry. These are the scenarios he's going to look at, so I'm going to pass it off to Darmender right now and let him wow you guys with what's going on in the background.
Thank you, Mark. You guys hear me well?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to kick off with the new application and deployment creation. So as Mark has been explaining, this automation has been geared at the modern apps. So what are the modern apps that we do at the Microsoft IT? We do the Windows Phone 8 apps. We do Windows 8 apps. We do iOS applications through this automation. And what are the methods of deployment we support? We support both the sideloading and deep linking. I mean, if you guys are not familiar with the concepts of sideloading, if you develop an app inside your company for your line of business applications, it's called a sideloading app. And if you link, if you have an app in the Windows Store or in iTunes, it's in the public marketplace, and you want to offer it to your users, that's called the deep link. So you can, this automation supports either of those formats. And we also support different types of targeting. You can go to the default, all users and groups. You can distribute the app to any user in the company, or you can limit it by using the security groups or distribution lists. Let's go ahead and kickstart the demo. All right. So you have been hearing this word, IT Dev Center, right? So let me show you how does it look like. So if you are a developer and in the Microsoft, and if you want to submit a modern app to your line of business, this is the IT Dev Center portal where they come. Here you can see the status of your previous apps, like how I'm seeing. There are a few apps that are failing for certification. That means there is some activity that needs to be done. Or you can go down and you can see tons of apps that are status incomplete. And if your app is published, you'll see the status published. So this is a portal, one place portal for the devs to go ahead and submit their apps. And if you want to submit your app, so this would be the interface they get. So if you are the requester who is submitting their app, you would go and put your app name, your app app version, what is the target platform you're deploying it for. So basically, this is a similar kind of experience that you get if you go to the Windows Store and try to submit your app if you're an outside public developer. So once the requester goes and fills all the metadata in the app here, then it comes into the TFS system, which Mark has been showing. I won't go much into that, but once they submit the app there, it gets, we have a background system that signs those apps with the right certificate and then takes it to the Windows 8 certification and then comes and files a TFS ready to deploy. So what happens when you go and file this TFS system? So we're going to look at this key particularly for the understanding what is the activity that is submitted. That here it is, new application object and creation. So let's go ahead and fire our runbook. So this is the real engine that drives the whole automation, right? So what I'm going to do right now is going to go to the top of the runbook. I'll explain you each of these steps in detail, but right now, let's go ahead and fire the runbook. And then we'll go and watch the logs to see what's going on. So
right now, just to let you know, the build that we have, we've turned off the scheduler because obviously we want to run this manually for today. But in the background in production, I think we have it checking every 2 hours.
Right now we are at 45 minutes. When we started, we were at 2 hours because we were not sure about how fast we would be able to do it. But right now, we are comfortable doing it at every 2 hours. So here we go. The log got created. So this is called the master log. Just remember the name for the time being. So let's see if I can use a zoom in.
This is where I was mentioning it might be hard to see the text on
right.
The screen.
So basically it's saying that it picked up that work item 2 and it set the work item state to in progress. Now, we set the work item state to in progress so that we tag a work item that we pick it up for automation. And then we are creating this XML file. So this is the XML file that we have been mentioning for a while now, but I can go ahead and show you what this XML file looks like. This XML file It's nothing but the dump of all the data we have in the ETFS work item. Apart from that, it has also some other fields. If you look at this environment node here, all these are the constants, like that doesn't change. Like what is your site server name? What is the site code? These are the stuff that doesn't change. These are called, these are the environment variables that are coming from the orchestrator. All right, I can minimize this node. And these are the fields that came from the TFS. So we create an XML file, grab half of the stuff from the orchestrator environmental variables, and then half of the stuff from the TFS. So we create this this XML file. So let's go back to the log file and see what's going on. All right. So after that, we validate this. After we created the XML file, we validate the data inside the XML. So before we go and attempt to create the object, we see that, do we have all the data that's necessary to create these objects? There's no point in attempting to create and failing. So we know what all data is necessary to create a successful configuration manager object. So we go and verify that. Did the requester filled out all these forms or not? So we validate programmatically. If they don't fill it, I will show you in the workflow. We send the work item back to them. So anyway, after it passes the test, we are going to go ahead and figure out what is this for, what is this work item for. And this, we know that this work item is for to create a new object and deploy. So what we're going to do is that in the binaries, we have a batch file. I mean, it's a batch file, but it calls a tons of PowerShell commandlets in the behind. So we're going to take this batch file and then parse this XML. Let me see if I can zoom in for you guys. So it's a batch file, and it calls this XML as a parameter, and that's the one that creates the entire object. So once we fire it here, we have another log, because this is the master log that the orchestrator is doing it. But once we fire the activity that we need to do, we create a second log called the activity log. So here, create and deploy. So this is a real activity that is going on in the configuration manager. Let's go to the top of it.
Very verbose, so that you know every step that was going on through the runbook. Because the runbook, once you get it home and you take a look at it, you're going to see it's very complex. There's a lot of components. This log really helps you understand where it was when something is successful or went wrong.
So I will explain this log briefly. What it does is that basically we import the modules that we built, our custom modules, and then we import the configuration manager modules, and we import the Active Directory modules. These are the three modules which we import. And then we are going to read the XML file. Here, basically, what we are doing is that we are reading the XML file and then understanding what is the stuff we need to do. And then we do three steps here. We fire the out-of-box commandlet, create a new application. And then once that is finished, we go ahead and create a deployment type. Because if you guys are familiar with the app model, you have an application, you have a deployment type, and you need to distribute the content, and you need to create an assignment. Those are the four steps that you do, even if you do manually. So we create the app, we create the deployment type. Again, here we are still using the out-of-box configuration manager commandlet. Then we come out and start using our custom code. Say, for example, I'll show you here. We're creating the icon. So if you guys are familiar with the configuration manager, there's an option where you can upload the icon for your application. So if you open it in the company portal or in the catalog, you can see the app with an icon that gives a better feeling for the user, like in the store. But the out-of-box configuration manager commandlets doesn't let you take an icon and do it. So we have here is where our custom commandlets come into the place and then convert this icon into a 64-bit string. The reason why we are converting this icon into a 64-bit string is that in the backend in the app SDK, that's how we store it. When you upload the icon into the configuration manager, we never save that file as it is. We extract a bitmap out of it and then convert it into a 64-bit string and store in the digest. So that's why you're programmatically doing the same. And then we do a few things like setting the fallback distribution points we need. When we wrote this tool, the out-of-box commandlets did not have these features, so we were doing it manually. Later on, when we released the commandlets for R2, we fixed all these bugs when we released it outside. So anyway, so we do all these things. And then now we created the app, we created the deployment type, we went and inserted the icon. Then we are going to go ahead and start distributing the content. Let me back up a little bit here. Yeah, this is again the out-of-box commandlet we are using. Once we start distributing commandlet, then we'll go ahead and create the assignment. You see that here. We are using the WMI way of doing it. We were not using the out-of-box commandlet because when we wrote this, we did not have the out-of-box commandlet, which we released again recently for R2. Anyway, so the point is that once we distribute the content to our DP group, because the modern app and the unified device management in the solution, most of the modern apps go to cloud. That's why we are sending it to the Intune DP group. If you see it. And once we succeed in creating the deployment, this is the output XML, which Mark was saying is that we record all the actions that we did. I'll show you how the output XML looks like. So in the same XML which I was showing you guys earlier, if you minimize the fields, here is the output field. At the end, we'll say that, oh, we got return code 0, we're successful. We created successfully, and we capture some results. This is the CI unique ID of the app that we capture it, and also we capture the application link in the portal. This is the link that Mark was saying that what are we going to do? That we take all these results and publish back into the TFS from where the dev center reads it and displays in their system. So the requester gets this link, this application link. And this is a link that Mark was saying earlier that the developers can evangelize their app by sending it to the audience. Hey, we released a new app. So then he used this link in HTTP format. So the user doesn't necessarily have to open the company portal and search for this app. If you click on that, we understand this protocol in the company portal and we open that up.
Yeah, especially once we have thousands of apps in the environment, it's difficult for a user to find something cool. So when the marketing guys want to promote their app, this makes it nice and simple. Just send them an email, click it, and you're right there to do the install. The other thing I think we should mention is the fields that we return back, such as the CI unique ID for the app and the deployment ID, those really are for our team to help the administrators troubleshoot. Instead of having them have to go back into the console or run some custom SQL queries to find out what's going on, if we're having a problem with something for a specific app, this is just a quick way for those guys to get that information and help them start troubleshooting a problem.
Yep. And what we are going to do apart from that is that once you go into the, now, because we completed the task, right, let's go ahead and refresh it. It still did not get refreshed. It is waiting for the response from the server. Yeah, it got refreshed right now. You see that we assigned it back to Dev Center. So Dev Center assigns to us, saying that go ahead and do this automation. And then once we are done, we assign it back to the Dev Center. We say the request has been completed. And then I also write some stuff here, which I want to show you guys. Here, we document that the object has been created successfully. Not only this, what we do is, apologies for this moving around. It's just a resolution thing. And here are the attachments. So all the log files that I showed you guys, we grab all those log files and we attach it to the work item. So if you want to troubleshoot later on, you can refer to these XML files and log files, especially in the failure scenarios. Not only that, we also go ahead, we have a place here for our results page that which I have been showing you earlier. Right. Maybe I overscrolled it, but.
And the way the TFS work item is used, that same work item is used for the entire life cycle of the application. So version to version builds, they're not sending out a new application Hey, look, we got some software changes.
So my...
It's working even while we're here. We're sending out software changes.
So here are the results page where we put the application CI unique ID and the company portal link for this. These are the metadata that the Dev Center reads from us and gives it back to the devs. Let's see what the... Okay, you got to see.
So you'll see that there's one field there that says company portal link for on-premise. It's not applicable. So we specifically know that this is a Windows Phone 8 app. So there's no point in providing a Windows 8 on-premise link for the on-premise portal or the catalog. When you publish a Windows 8 app that maybe supports across x86, x64, and RT, then both of those fields will be filled in. One's for on-premise users. The other one is for the hybrid company portal, which was the Intune-facing cloud-managed version. So we control whether or not which one those fields get filled out.
Let's see if the app we published actually went into the cloud. Okay, I'm going to turn this one on. And then... Let's get this app up. Tough time getting this app up. Okay. Okay, close it. Let's close this app.
The demo god's not being friendly with us today.
Let's go ahead and fight it again. That's fine.
While he's doing that, I'll type in the password to save us some time.
Yes. Say yes. Yes. No. We lost. No. So, hold it. Yes. Say yes. Yeah. So, when we publish the app into the configuration manager, because that configuration manager hierarchy has connection to the Windows Intune cloud, so that app gets uploaded into the cloud, and we are looking at the company portal of the Windows Phone 8. Actually, it's 8.1, Windows Phone 8.1, which we released recently. And the name of the app we published is Academy. See, it's right here. So this is talking to our test Windows Intune hierarchy right now. And if you're a user, this is how the user gets the app. This is where the Mark was saying that it's actually way faster than what is our SLA is that. But to keep it on the safe side, we say that 6 hours, but actually it's much faster. And again, it depends upon the size of the hierarchy because our hierarchy is so large. For modern devices, we support over 102K users, 102K users. Mm-hmm. And for the regular devices, we support 330K users. So yeah, it's pretty large. So.
Good thing to note, look at the version number there. It's saying 1.004. When he does supersedence, we'll see how that changes when it publishes the update of the app.
All right, let's go to the presentation again. And this is about application supersedence. We'll go through the demo but the difference between the creating a new object and doing a supersedence is that even for supersedence, you are going to create a new app object, but you are going to establish a relationship between these two apps and say that app B is superseding app A. And also the other thing what we are going to do in our automation is that, and as a standard at Microsoft IT, we always go ahead and upgrade, enforce the app upgrade on the users. If you're having app A, we enforce the automatic upgrade of the app to B. So the user doesn't have to go and himself self-upgrade. That's a standard we use in Microsoft IT. There's no need for everybody to follow it. You can choose whatever is appropriate for your organization. And also we support in the automation that if app A, which is on version 1, can be targeted to all users, and the app B, maybe you can target the subset of users. So the collection targeting can be different between the superseded app and superseding app. We support that in the automation. So let's go ahead and fire the automation again. So what we're going to do is that we're going to go to the TFS, and we are going to increment the version of the app. One important thing is that you should use the same, for our automation, what we presume is that we should use the same work item ID for the entire life cycle of the app. That's the way we identified this is the same app that came back into the system and we need to supersede now. This is not for the new creation. And so that's why I'm using the same work item. And I incremented the version to 5, and I'm going to assign it back to SD Triage. In reality, nobody's going to do this manually. People are going to open the dev center and then say that, hey, I need to supersede this app. And the dev center SharePoint has all the logic inside it to understand that they're upgrading the same app and then editing these fields in the TFS in a programmatic way. And then what we're going to do here is that we are going to go ahead and supersede the old application. That's what we're going to do. And we're going to come down. Up, I went way down. And then we're going to change the content folder to 5. Hope I got all the stuff in. Okay. Now let's go ahead and save this. And it's saved. Let's go ahead and fire our automation.
So again, this is the scenario when the dev maybe's found a bug or they've just got new features they want to release. It could literally be within the next 24 hours, 2 days, and they're going to use that same request that they did in Dev Center to just update their app, and that same ticket will have the complete history from the day that app entered our environment until the day it's retired.
All right, we went and go ahead and fired the orchestrator runbook. We know what it's going to do now, so we're not going to focus on that, but we're going to focus on what is there inside this runbook that's making this whole thing possible. So earlier we were talking about the global variables, right? Let's start there. So here is where we declared our variables. They are like, what is your CAS server name? What is the site code? As I said, these are the constant, doesn't change quite often. Here is our DP group name, and here we have a bunch of these folder IDs. Mark believes in keeping the configuration manager console very clean, so he's particular about which app needs to go into which folder ID. So for example, when I created the app earlier, this is the app we created earlier. Let's go ahead and refresh the console. See, it's here. So he's very particular about the Windows Phone 8 apps go into the Windows Phone 8 folder, and virtual applications go into the virtual applications folder, and iOS applications go into the their respective folders. So that's why we declared a bunch of these variables here and gave the folder IDs names so that when we create these apps programmatically, we don't leave them all over the console, but move them into the right folders.
So in your test environment, when you set this up, these are fields that you're going to need to go into and make modification for because your environment obviously is not going to match those entries.
And because we exported the runbooks along with these variables, so you will get these variables into your runbooks when you import them. Please go ahead and modify it if you're trying to use them. And here are the other variables which we have, like, hey, what is the SQL server name? Where are our binaries? And what is our TFS server path? These binaries, which we have been talking about a lot, I'm going to show you a little bit about these binaries. Right. So this is our automation binaries. They are categorized into the 3 big folders. The binaries are in, binaries itself are categorized into the 2 folders. There's TFS binaries. These are the DLLs that we need to programmatically talk to the TFS. And here are the bunch of the PowerShell commandlets we wrote how to talk to TFS. You have been seeing that we have been modifying the TFS. We have been uploading the files into the TFS. So these are the PowerShell scripts that we used to upload into TFS. Again, we are giving all this thing for you guys. At the end of the session, there's a link where you can go ahead and download all this stuff from. And in the binaries, there's another folder called workflow folder. And these are where all the configuration manager custom commandlets that we wrote are here. Say, for example, create and deploy, which we did earlier. Here is a batch file which we fired, but this batch file in reality is going to fire these tons of PowerShell modules, and they fire each other module in a programmatic way. So that's how this whole thing is accomplished. So we are going to take this batch file and then parse the XML, appropriate XML to it. So if you want to play it straight away, all you need to do is that take these binaries and then parse the XML. We also uploaded the sample XMLs into the OneDrive where we kept our links. So you can take any of those XMLs and parse with the appropriate batch file. Say, for example, the supersedence, which we just fired now, we're going to fire the supersedence.bat, which internally is going to fire these tons of PowerShell commandlets and all that stuff. I'm not going to open and show each of the PowerShell commandlets, but because most of you guys are familiar with that, so you can do that. Anyways, so these are the prerequisites for it, but let's go and see the runbook itself. Yeah, as Mark was saying, is we disabled this automatic waking up for the demo purpose. So we said initialize the data whenever we want it so that we can fire whenever we want it. So here are the few quick things we do in our runbook. First, we check the orchestrator database and say that, hey, is any of these runbooks checked out by somebody else apart from orchestrator? If we do that, if we figure that some runbooks are checked out, then we don't proceed, we exit. And the same way, we say that, has anybody, again, this is, again, in the orchestrator database that we do that, has anybody manually fired any of the sub-runbooks that which we are interested in? If any of the sub-runbooks are running, we again exit. We will only proceed in all the conditions if all the environmental changes are zero. And then what we're going to do here is that we're going to go and grab, look into the TFS and see that, is there any work item that's available for us to process when we wake up. Remember those fields that Mark was saying that where is it assigned to and is it set to that automation is requested. If we look into those fields and if those fields say yes, then we're going to take these work items and run the workflow. Remember there's a loop on this this particular runbook. I'll explain you why there's a loop on this runbook. And then we're going to go here. I'm going to explain you that in a moment, why we had a loop on that runbook.
So you'll see that there's not a different section for every function. So for every activity type, such as create, deploy, or supersede, or delete, the runbook's the same runbook. It's the same workflow. It's just based on the XML data that's input, helps us determine what the runbook itself is going to trigger for PowerShell on the back end. So it keeps it nice. It's as concise as we could get it at this point.
We go ahead and run the TFS queries, and if the count of runbooks that we need to process, if it's greater than one, then we go down and we go to set work item state to state in progress. So we are going to call the TFS programmatically and change the state into work in progress so that we don't accidentally touch it again. That means we are watermarking it. Hey, we already touched it and we're in the process of doing it. And then here is what, create the TFS XML. Earlier I was showing you the XML. So once we understand that there's a work item that we need to process, then we will go ahead and create an XML. And then we validate the data inside this XML. For example, that we have a standard that every app should have an icon uploaded into it. Every app should have a description. Every app should have a privacy link. So we have some standards that our governing body set, and we need to meet that standard for publishing the app. So basically, we are going to validate if that data is all filled out in the TFS for us to proceed. If not, then we call it that. If we can take the other path, we will take the other path. If all the data is not right, we say this is an invalid work item. And if it's an invalid work item, it should go back to the requester. So we send the TFS back to the requester and documenting what is the stuff that he missed. But if it's a valid work item, here is where it gets interesting. We call the workflow and 4.0.1, let's go here. So here we are invoking this runbook from inside this runbook. So let's go to this runbook. So what we are here going to do is that, here we are calling 4.0.2. Anyway. So once we got the XML, once we validated everything is fine, we are going to look this field, the request. What is this request that this work item is asked to do? Is it create and deploy, supersede, delete, whatever is requested? We're going to understand that, and we're going to come back, and we're going to look into our module hash. So here is where the relationship between what activity should fire which batch file. So we have all these things outlined here. So once we understood, okay, this is the activity we need to do, and I showed you guys where the binaries are located, even that is declared as a global variable, where our binaries are, so the system knows where its binaries are. So it's going to use this relationship that, okay, right now I need to do, for example, supersedence, I would fire the supersedence.bat. That's how it knows it. And then it uses the basic CMD module and then fires that particular thing. right? That's what we saw in the master log, that we go and fire this batch file with the XML file. So anyway, let's come back to the main runbook. Sorry for coming and getting out of the runbooks, but that's how the runbook designer works. Let's go up and see where we stopped. Anyway, we called the work item, and we understood it's a supersedence, and we process the supersedence work item. And then we understand that we finished the work item. And then if we finish the work item successfully, we upload the files. Earlier, I was showing you in the TFS that we uploaded all the log files and XML files. This is how the workflow looks like. Basically, it's just copying the file. And then in the end, we come down and say that we reassign the work item back to the requester if it is successful. So we come back here and assign the work item back to the dev center. If you look at this logging, we have separate modules for logging for the people who are interested in. It starts with the logging M. M is the master log, which I was telling you. There are all the orchestrator activities. If you come down, we have logging A. This is the activity logs, because I showed you two logs. One is that orchestrator, which is acting as a wrapper, and then calls the appropriate activity file. So that's how we split out the logging into the two modules. One is the activity, and other is the requesting module. And see, here is we always exit here with one. So retry is count. That's why we have a loop on this, and we come back and loop it here. Even though we are successful, we always exit with one. Why? Because, say, if we queried the TFS and we found multiple work items that we need to process, we take one at each. We don't do parallel processing of work items because our hierarchy is so large with so many. Say, if I'm deploying like 200,000 users, 10 apps, I'm creating a million relationships. We won't be able to take that much of a load. So to prevent the parallel processing from happening, we take each, at an instance, only one work item, and we come down, finish that work item, and we loop back and go again and see if there's any work item in the queue that needs to process. That's why we loop back so that we don't do parallel processing. Anyway, let's go ahead and see whether the thing that we deployed, is it showing up or not.
I already cheated and checked just to make sure.
Yeah, you did? Okay.
So remember the last time we showed Academy, it was set to version 1.0.0.4. And while we go into Academy again, you'll see now that it's showing it's been superseded to version 1.0.0.5, although there's an update button, which means it already knows that the previous version's installed. If this user communicates back with the Intune gateway at its next service interval, that will automatically update their app, and it will just show that the share button that it's been installed. So let's go ahead, and I'll just trigger the update.
So about delete an application. So when a requester thinks that he's done with deleting the application, he's done with the app lifecycle, he can go ahead and ask for deleting the application. What are the steps we do when we're deleting the application? If it's a superseded application, we have like chain, like 4 to 5. How many apps do we have that have 4 to 5 chains?
Probably 60% of our apps have a lot of chains. As I was saying, they revision these internally quite frequently.
Right, so it's very important for us to delete the whole chain. And when we are deleting the whole chain, we make sure that we delete from the bottom of the chain so that if we fail while deleting the top of the chain, we may end up showing the, say for example, if the N is the latest app and it has N-1, N-2, N-3, if we fail at N-1, we may end up actually showing N-2 to the users, which is bad experience. So we start deleting from the bottom of the chain. Say if we have 5 in the chain, N-4, N-3, N-2, that's how we go and delete the apps. And we also delete the collections that were created. We also remove the content from the DPs and from our hosting shares. So we do all this in the automation that we have. Let's go ahead and look at what are the lessons that we learned while we did all this stuff. The first lesson we learned is that after running it for 6 to 7 months, we saw that our group discovery is taking, the Delta group discovery is taking around 25 hours. Remember, we depend heavily on the security groups to do the targeting. So because if you guys are familiar with the Configuration Manager, the group discovery is a global data. So that means that this data is present on all the primary sites. So we thought that why we need to do it on all the primary sites, let's do the group discovery on one primary site that's sitting in the Redmond. And in the 6 months, we ended up discovering around 1,500 security groups. And to do the delta discovery on 1,500 security groups, we took around 25 hours. Then what we did is that we went and did load balance the discovery processing on all the primary sites. For example, in the Redmond, we have four primary sites. We round robin, we add the new security groups in a round robin fashion in all the four primary sites. That's the way we were able to come up with this problem. Because right now we have around 400, 500 apps and 1,500 security groups that we target. So the scalability quickly became an issue.
Yeah, the security groups are really being used to control who has access to see the app. So in general, majority of the apps are targeted to all users because they're internal line of business apps and most users may want to see them. But there are some times when the dev teams only want a certain subset of users. Either they're maybe beta testing something or there really is a security relationship between the app and the back end. So there's no point in offering it to everybody. So they create a custom security group in Active Directory and actually submit that to us to say, that's the people that we want to target this app to. And so we have hundreds of security groups now building up as part of discovery rules, and that's what put the load against the system with them all being on a single primary site.
Right. And also the other thing, what we ran into problem is, remember when Mark was showing you the TFS thing, he was showing that various fields for content for iOS, content for RT app, content for Windows 8 app. So we quickly ran out of those fields right now because, say, for example, if we come up with the, we have Windows Phone 8.1, which supports the APPX bundles and various other kind of formats, or if there is iOS 8, or if you have to do the Android apps. So the number of fields in the TFS kept on increasing, and it's going to look gigantic. So we have to go ahead and redesign our TFS UI so that it's scalable. So if you're going to do it from the scratch, this is a tip we want to give you, especially for the content location. If you're trying to put too many fields like us, you are going to run out of the space inside the TFS to hold all this content.
Yeah, and that content location, again, was how we use that to define what actual deployment type would be created in Config Manager. And of course, as we support more operating systems, more device types, that's gonna keep expanding, and that's not something we really have control over. The developers wanna develop as soon as something's available to them. So we need to make it a little more dynamic, and so that's something that we're working on the back end, but it's something, if you guys decide to implement this kind of solution, it's something you think about up front.
And the other last lesson we learned is that because we're automating, everything is going in automated fashion, we lost a track of how many applications are having superseded applications and what's the length of the chain. So as Mark was mentioning earlier, we have around 150 apps that have like at least four to five superseded apps in the chain. And that means that we are evaluating for the compliance for all those apps. And right now our database, configuration manager database size is like 1.5 terabyte. So you quickly lose the track of how much compliance data you have in your system and how much content you are using in the Azure cloud and how much content you are using on the DPs because everything is automated. So we need to go and figure out what is the appropriate supersedence chain allowed in our organization and stuff, which we are still talking about. One caveat about is that, say if you have nth app and n-1 and n-2, if a guy who had N-2 app went on vacation and came back after 15 days, by this time if you're on nth app, and if you deleted the targeting for the N-2 app, the system doesn't automatically upgrade them to N. They have to manually go and upgrade themselves. So there are a few decisions you need to make. Okay, what is the allowed limit in your organization?
We're kind of working out, it's more of a process problem. This is not really necessarily an automation specific. This is from a config manager admin, how am I going to manage the environment, and what process we use to decide when we finally delete that object out of the console. The object's needed so that if the user installed that particular version and it's been superseded one or multiple times, that object still needs to exist and be targeted to them for them to come online and get a new policy to say, oh, number 5 is now really the latest version and get that. If they happen to have their device offline, you know, they're on holidays for a month or something, and they come back online and we've deleted the original object that they had installed, There then is no more reference point. These guys are basically orphaned on that older version. They can go back into the company portal and click the latest version, and it will in place upgrade them, but it won't happen automatically. And so the app developers basically will be looking at a smaller subset and a smaller subset of the app that they've deployed. So we're working with our internal teams to figure out where's that happy medium of deciding that, okay, this app has been published for this amount of time, all these users, maybe we got to 95% of the users on the older builds are upgraded, we're just gonna kill these off. And that will reduce the load on the config manager hierarchy, which is important.
And as we said earlier, we are giving up all our binaries and all the runbooks at this particular link that's loaded on the OneDrive. And there's a password for the runbooks. Please make sure that you look into the deck to get the passwords. So we met all your objectives that you came here for.
I hope you guys still managed to survive, those of you that stayed. I hope you made it through. I know it sometimes seems a bit dry because it's a kind of a technical, not an exciting, flashy presentation, but the information there, when you take it back, is going to be really helpful. Even if you don't implement this solution as is, it gives you a lot of ideas. Hopefully, you know, whets your appetite for opportunities that you have in your environment to do automation of any kind with these tools.
Right. This is just to give you a sample on how you can quickly onboard the apps. I hope it's useful. Thank you, guys.
If anybody has any questions.